Thank you so much for listening to the Midlife Rewired podcast. If this content is useful to you, please subscribe, rate, and share with your friends and loved ones. Richard Garner. Richard is a very talented and passionate communicator, storyteller with over 20 years of television and radio experience as a director, host, and network executive. And now will be the host of a massive new podcast coming out in January 2020 called What If. Richard, tell us about What If.
What If Discussed is the, I guess, the brainchild and the sort of first brand extension of What If, the highly successful and popular video science series on, well, online. You probably would have, if you've come across it, you've come across it on Facebook. It's the number one science show on Facebook, which is not a small statement. And it's Steve Hulford and his group, his team at Underknown Media, that put this together over a few years, and it's interesting because, you know, you and I talk a lot about a lot of things, but curiosity is a big part of, I think, what gets you even considering rewiring, right? Like, and you could argue there's not a lot of that. So the cool thing about What If is it's the hypothetical. What if there were two suns? What if we discovered alien life? What if you live 50 years in the future? So it starts a conversation that's based in just a, like, kind of when you're kids and you're just asking any question. There's no wrong answers, and there's actually no right answers because it's a hypothetical. Right. So you just, you know, you shoot the shit on that, and you bring in some scientists, you bring in some experts. They can bring their educated opinion, but in the end, it's kind of just a fun conversation and generally fascinating, and I would say it's the type of thing for wonder junkies. If you're a wonder junkie, the show should be for you.
Well, thanks for being here, brother. Yep. And I got to say, you know, Richard and I have known each other for quite a few years now, and there's been a lot of amazing conversations over the years. It's never a fucking surface level conversation with you, brother. So we've been down some deep holes, and it's wonderful. You know, one of the first books that Richard actually told me to pick up way back in the day was Conscious Evolution. And, you know, that kind of really sort of is part of the path I'm on today. Mm. So I thank you for that, dude. But so Richard, so you just told you about the podcast he's working on now. Richard's been in the media for business for quite a while. Just one side story before we get into it, dude. And some of you don't know you. In 1993, if you don't know, there's the famous story, and there's a lot of video out there, of the day the Jays won the World Series. Joe Carter hit that home run. And maybe you could just tell me sort of how you set that up and what you did.
Well, as you would involve a story like this, generally will include alcohol. So it was the sixth game of the World Series in Toronto, Jays Phillies. Jays had won the World Series the year before, a lot of anticipation. They're up in this series 3-2. They're up in the game 5-1 in the seventh inning. So the party's on, right? We're bombed, right? Like, everybody's throwing back pints. You're kind of getting ready to celebrate. The Phillies come back and storm ahead, I believe, in the eighth inning and are up 6-5. All of a sudden, the depressants and the alcohol kick in. And now it's all, we're all like super pissed. And so they come up in the ninth. They get a rally going, but I'm still really not believing at this point. And to be honest, Joe Carter, although he's, you know, very prolific player, 100 RBI guy every year, I wasn't a big fan. In this spot, and sure enough, he's has a couple of swings and misses and looks like he's going to strike out. So I'm kind of whatever, and then bam, the next pitch is gone. And it goes over the wall almost exactly where we're sitting. Yeah. So I don't remember anything after that consciously, except that the next memory is hearing this. And it's my own breath, right? There's 50,000 people screaming, but it's, you know, like you see in the movies, it's completely silent. Yeah. I'm almost in a bubble, and I'm looking around, and then I'm all like, oh, there's Joe Carter, because I'm on the field. And there were no police set up at this point because the home run just kind of obviously happened. Yeah. So then I see him. So I kind of took my eyes off the security and kind of darted for Carter. sure enough, I didn't get there. I got close, and then I got tackled. But, I mean, it was kind of like a war had ended in the Sky Dome at the time. Like, the cops were just as happy. Like, they were taking me out and going, woo! Like, they were cheering. So they just brought you to the door.
Right.
Like, there were no arrests and all that. Right. So in the end, it was all harmless. It was like a, you know, probably, you know, in terms of life experience, it's one of the craziest life experiences that I think you could ever be part of. But sure. And it's also, when I look back and see the video of it, I'm always, the thing that stands out to me is like, that's probably one of five times I was wearing khakis. It's like, why? Like, I never wear, but in that, you know, I'm wearing khakis and a purple shirt, and I look like an escaped lunatic.
I'm not sure
lunatic.
If we believe that now, though.
Yeah, for sure. Fair enough.
Word for it.
But good times, yes.
Cool, man. Well, we talked about, I just mentioned conscious evolution, and in your Twitter profile, you've got a work in progress, making progress. So what's going on with you these days, I guess, in terms of your personal evolution and your personal journey?
Well, it's interesting because I haven't read that in a while, that profile. And that, man, does that fit? That felt good when you said it. Because it's if you're on any type of path or journey, and obviously if you're listening right now, you more than likely are. You know, there's a lot of similarity and crossover, right? You'll start to go, you know, if you're a critical thinker when you're younger, first of all, religion's dumb. Right? You figure out at some point, religion, what a scam, you know, that's for idiots, and I'm smarter than that, I've figured that out. And often you'll go into sort of, let's say, a more atheistic path. Some people consider themselves agnostic, and I'm talking teen years, right? And you're kind of like, now you're anti-establishment a little more, you're a little more like unconventional, but not a lot of people, in my experience, come back from that. They'll end up staying on the path of let's say you're more of a liberal academic, you'll be socially conscious, but you're all the spiritual stuff or all that's bullshit because you've already decided it, you've already put it in the religion box,
right.
So you've abandoned that and thrown away the key. I'm thankful that for whatever reason at some point, and it was a lot, like conscious evolution for me is a starting point for sure of another direction, of another level, let's say. Which the very idea and the term, and it's a book by Barbara Marx Hubbard, I came across it, and it's one of those stories that you have, right? I got an indigo gift thing from my girlfriend at the time, and I was walking down, a massive, aisle of books, like probably 1,000 books, and I just stopped and turned, and that was the book that, and you know, they're all like standing up, and for whatever reason, that it was like, you know, somebody reached out and grabbed me and said, this is the book you're getting, right? And but the term, as much as the book is one of the best, even today, one of the best blueprints to not only consciously, but also practically start to implement consciousness in your life, but also at a macro level. But the word, it was like this new revelation that, so wait a sec, we can consciously evolve?
Right.
Like we'd always kind of understood evolution to be something that happened to you. Right? Oh, like our tails fell off at one point, and then we were bent over, and then we were Homo erectus. But it was just something that we were kind of bystanders, passively engaged in, happening to us. The idea that we could decide how we evolved was like a foreign concept to me. I'd never heard it put that way, and it was one of those light bulb moments.
Yeah.
And it just started a path which, and but that's also, and back to the sort of progress and in progress, that's 20 plus years ago,
right.
And of course during any sort of revelatory period of your life, you go through those stages. Now I'm going to tell everybody what and now I'm going to educate, and there's an aspect of you that can even find yourself, because ego is still prevalent.
Absolutely.
it's just taken on a different form now. It's like, okay, he's over here now, okay, we'll abandon the red sports cars and the custom suits. But we'll still integrate into his idea that he's superior,
right?
Because he's figured something out. So that's still a possibility. You don't necessarily see that. You have the blind spot still, which I still have. So there's a part of you that starts, like you might find yourself saying, I used to be this and now I'm this.
Right.
And then thankfully over many, many trials and errors and restarts and false starts, and you at some point, and I'll say this, and I'll avoid speaking absolutely as much as I can for the rest of my life, because it's just never a good idea. there's always something evolving, there's always something happening, there's always something you're going to look back on and say, man, how did I think that at the time? But at least acknowledging that and freeing yourself of the idea that you're going to be finished this work,
right.
Like, you know what, yeah. I'm done. Hey, yeah. Brian, guess what? I'm finished.
Fully enlightened.
I'm fully enlightened. Yeah. And what do I got? I got 50 years left? Giddy up. And of course, you realize, A, it's a full-time job. B, it never ends.
Yeah.
But there is a gift in that that you realize, because yes, there's new revelations. I don't want to say levels because it sounds like a hierarchy that again, I'm higher than whatever. But there's life is revealed to you in more and more ways, and it can't help but create humility and gratitude in you and grace. Right. And when you've had the fucking good fortune to experience like a fucking trace of grace in your life, you know it's not describable, you know it's transcendent, and of course there's a part of you that wants to get back there all the time, which is even a bit addictive. I want to re-experience that, I want to go back.
Yeah.
But it's like anything else, you chase it, you push it away.
Yeah.
So that you're trying to find this space that's always going to be elusive, which is, you know those pictures that people have, I never remember the name, where you look at it and after a while you can see something in it. Well, yeah. I can't remember what those are called. Yes. Like George Costanza ends up in one of those and he takes his shirt off in the bathroom with Seinfeld fans. But anyways, and I've always been terrible at those. But other people can, and then somebody explained to me, it's one of these contradictions. You got to focus and not focus. You got to look but not look.
Right.
And it's like, well, what the fuck is it? Like in a binary dualistic world. And then you just find the in-between.
Yeah.
And there is the picture.
Right.
This whole process for me and my experience is those moments of getting in that the middle, let's say the limbo between dualism, right? Between whatever this dualistic construct is that we're in. It would seem to me that the name of the game, that the objective is to transcend the dualism.
Right.
Well, that's fucking hard, man. Yeah. We're in a material body that looks a certain way, that sounds whatever. Right. Everything in us is conditioned and wired to dualism. Either you're good or you're bad. So now the in-between, the gray, is very difficult intellectually, and it's even harder physically. But when you start to spend more time in that fucking beautiful, free-flowing space of non-dualism, you can start to feel that humility, that wholeness. And again, it's evasive. It's right. Like you get it for a bit. Oh, I want to keep it. It's gone. But for me, those experiences have continued to grow a little more each year. And am I perfect? Have I ascended some enlightenment ladder? No. But can I say 100% authentically and credibly for me that it's infinitely better than where I was a year before, 5 years before, 10 years before, in terms of being able to interface with that non-dualism? Yes, it happens right. More and more, and I it makes me look forward again humbly to the next X amount of years in this body to experience more and more of that transcendence.
So are you doing what you're describing? So for you to get there is are we talking meditation, daily meditation? Is that
the
tool? I mean, we can read about this, as you know. It's all there, but unless you actually embody the experience, it's really hard to actually heal and grow and find that grace as you describe it. So, you know, what's a daily ritual for you around meditation, I guess? Do you do it daily?
So I would say, and again, with the risk of generalizing, but I would imagine anybody that's been on a path that's listening to this has gone through the stages, right? And you and me, and we both know that, yeah, okay, you might read something, and then it's books. And then you have this voracious appetite, more books.
Right.
I love this because you've connected with truth, and there's almost nothing that feels like that.
Yeah.
You want more of that. And of course, with inevitably one of the books, in fact, many of the books, will have some sort of practice at the end.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Okay, well, once you've done these chapters, I was the guy that never finished the book.
Yeah.
Like, I would be like, I'll get to the meditation and stuff. And then I probably started dabbling in meditation 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. Brian, it fucking took me, and I say this, it took me because even today, well, I meditated twice already today.
Amazing.
So, but I still I don't want to use the word struggle, but it's still a challenge to stick daily for a long, sustained period of time. But to your point, I don't want to say you can't, but I know that personally and through my experience and others' experiences, until it becomes practice beyond the theoretical. Because again, the reading is still a theoretical or it's an intellectual process.
Correct.
The even listening to the videos, right? You'll start to listen to videos and that'll have an effect.
Yes.
And those are all part of a process. But of course, until you are in a regimented daily practice that is probably going to be a little different for everybody, but generally speaking, it's going to involve, and for me, it's not just meditating once a day. It's not a 10-minute meditation. Not surprisingly, there's a direct correlation to how I feel and the transcendent feeling to how much I meditate.
Yes.
Wow, what a shocker,
right?
Eh?
Yeah.
And it's, of course, obvious.
Yes.
Yet, even with, I've been in experiences, I've had revelatory experiences that I could only describe as otherworldly, yet still the egoic mind was able to convince me to be, do you really have to do it today?
You got stuff to do, man.
And it's you're cool. There's an insanity to that.
Yeah.
I've literally been to nirvana in something that I could easily break down. I've been on my knees crying from how unbelievably humble and overpowering this connection to the source was. And so you'd think, well, logically, that's you'll do that forever because you know you have validation. You've done it and you've experienced it, so that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
No, I could still go off and party like a rock star for 3 days, do drugs and do whatever. This is before, and then be like, wow, I lost that feeling.
Yes.
Well, duh.
Yes.
So whatever the next, whatever the future of this meat puppet experience is as Richard Garner, it's more and more and more and more, or let's say this, it's less and less and less about, okay, how do I fit my meditation or my yoga or my kundalini practice or whatever it is into my life? It's got to be the other way around. And that's a lot, for a lot of people, that's wait here. Like, let's not get crazy. We all got to get up and eat. And well, okay, that's your decision. But you have to accept then that it's all, it's just like we say in business. You can't get something done off the corner of your desk. It never moves, right? It moves relative to the amount of effort and commitment and intention you put into it.
Right.
Well, this is the same. So now, as I continue to thankfully grow and in this world, it's more and more okay. I know that when I meditate 5 times a day, a lot of people are like, oh, 5 times a day. You look back to most ancient practices, Muslims, for instance, pray 5 times a day.
Right.
There's a reason for those things, because somebody figured out back in the day, just like charging your phone, it could be fully charged. You go out in this crazy world for a bit, the charge is down, whatever.
Absolutely.
You don't recharge throughout the day. It doesn't have to, generally speaking, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be 30 minutes to an hour for me in the morning.
Right.
Then wherever I'm going, I commute a lot, right? Yeah. So I don't drive. And for me, that ends up being another 30 minutes on a subway or a TTC or a streetcar. Well, that's another 20 minutes. You have your lock in with your earbuds.
Yeah.
And now, so before I've gotten to quote unquote work, I've already had 2 really deep meditations. It's obviously set me up energetically and frequency wise in a much better state. And then I'll schedule now 11:30, 2:30. And of course, yes, you can be a bit flexible if there's something, whatever. But I will know that I'll meditate 2 more times at work throughout the day. More if I can, more if I'm smart enough to.
Yes.
And then on the way home, I will do again another, So that's your 5 times.
Yeah.
Where I've still, my next thing that I really got to get committed to and repeating and locking in is nighttime before bed.
Yeah.
Because so many people talk, do you meditate before bed?
I don't do necessarily a formal meditation
there. Yeah.
I do some visualization. I do try to bookend my day because I do my major meditation in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I kind of do some informal meditation throughout the day. So I'll just be, if I'm driving, for example, I'll just become very mindful of how I'm feeling, what's happening around me. So just always trying to to aim and sustain my attention into one place, you know. And what I hope people are listening, like, you know, what you said there, because you were not meditating five times a day, you know, not that long ago, at least.
No.
You know, and man, like, it makes such a huge difference. And the thing that people have a challenge with, I think, is they try it, and then they automatically say, ah, oh, fuck, I can't sit there for that long. And they tell themselves that story, and then that's what it is.
Yeah.
But if people give themselves an opportunity to, because you said as well, you can't meditate for a few days and then go blow your brains out for 3 days and then expect to be anywhere near. You're starting over, basically.
Yeah.
Because with consistency comes momentum. And then when you get the momentum, and then you get those moments where you just feel that encompassing love and those tears come.
Yeah.
That just keeps you coming back for more. It's like a perfect golf swing, you know? That keeps you coming back.
But the golf swing's the perfect analogy, because the oddity about this is that when those people you're referring to generally, and I mean, I know those people as well, and I was one of those people as well too, in that I remember saying, man, I can't shut my mind off. Meditation isn't for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm right. somebody that there is a constant narrative in my mind most of the day, right? The challenge for me is not shutting it down as much as it is allowing, almost like ignoring a child that's trying to get at your attention.
Right.
You just have to get into, you know, sort of building almost a wall between it, and allowing it to coexist. But a lot of people who are very successful in life, it's not like they don't know that you don't show up one day and become an excellent golfer, or you become an excellent doctor. Every one of the things that we know that we've accomplished required repetitive, regimented commitment for an extended period of time.
I think it's hard to find tangible results from meditation from the outside. Because
yes.
We talked about this earlier. It's a feeling.
Yes.
It just changes everything. And you know, I used to really take more of a mystical approach to it now. But now I'm like, it's almost a practical approach where it really, for me, it's like, as human beings, that, you know, We're the human experience is like prone to suffering, and it's literally reducing the suffering, finding a way to manage that, essentially. And we talked about healing as well, you know, healing. So it's just about really optimizing your well-being, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think that people have a hard time connecting meditation to that. That, you know, so you know, if you practice golf, your score is going to get better.
How do
you quantify that with meditation?
That's a good, the good news is there's people like Joe Dispenza who are doing some studies that are, you know, it's like anything, right? At some point, medical studies will catch up to it. It's measurable now. It'll be infinitely more measurable, I would assume, going forward. You know what, to me, the interesting thing about this is, Brian, and I think it's important for me to even say, like, I don't want to mischaracterize this as though I was proactive in this. I was 100% driven to whatever was required because of suffering. Like, it was a necessity. It was like, at some point, this is untenable. The anxiety, the angst, the depression, or whatever it was. So it wasn't like I was just, you know, I'm just super smart and proactive and I'm going to... No, like most things, necessity is the mother of all invention.
Right.
It was either like, I got to check out of here. If I'm going to manage this thing going forward, I have to access whatever's available to me to be able to allow me to not just not feel bad, but to actually, like, I didn't want to live a joyless life. And somebody asked me one day, like, how often do you feel joy?
Right.
And of course, your default is you'll describe initially pleasure.
Right.
Oh, I know, I remember the other day. No, that's pleasure. You were happy because something happened at work. That's not fucking joy.
Right.
You felt good. There was endorphins running through your body because something happened outside. That's not joy. That's pleasure reward system shit that is just the opposite of pain. Joy is a fucking, as you know, it's like this, it's the sustained stillness and silence that can travel with you in and out of whatever the situation.
Right.
And that is the only way to get to that pool is through the inner work. And so for me, it becomes, first of all, it's a coping mechanism, for lack of a better word, to be able to deal with what is an insane world, I would say, like set up on every level in an insane way that pulls us from what is real and keeps us rooted in the material and the things that aren't real and fear and all that and survival, which is, you cannot live happily and joyfully in survival mode, full stop.
Right.
Full stop. So of course we're conditioned to believe we're finite beings. Well, if you believe you're finite, which of course, and ironically, even religious people act and believe out of fear as though they're finite, they're supposed to be the ones that know we're not finite.
Right.
That we're here for a bit, we're going to whatever. Yeah. Clearly, they don't walk the walk. Many people don't walk the walk. Some do. So when you if you grow up thinking you're Brian Coons in a physical meat suit and whatever, and like every other human being, well, the very notion of the survival instinct is fear. It's in the whole system, the whole operating system of survival is designed
right.
to make you suspicious of your environment. Yeah. That's different. That's bad.
Right.
This is whatever empathy. I can't have too much empathy. That'll hurt my ability to react. So all of that, you have to find a way to rewire
right.
all of this fucking survival wiring
right.
while at the same time being able to go inside and face shit that many of us don't want to fucking
right.
face
because
it's our fucking monsters right. of darkness, trauma, whatever else happened. But of course, like anything else, no pain, no gain.
Right.
And for anything else that anybody that's ever done something and achieved something after, whether it was physical, whether it was learning a musical instrument, whether it was an entrepreneurial venture, we know that, yes, there's like everything in physics, there's a buildup of energy, like an orgasm, you can
yeah.
describe, same thing,
yeah.
there's a buildup of energy,
yeah.
buildup of energy, it's push friction, it hits a critical mass, and poof, the tipping point, and you go through to another side, to
right.
whatever, but it required, there's almost nothing like that in the world that doesn't require discomfort, angst, effort, sweat, pain,
right.
whatever you want to say, but I'll take willful, conscious pain any day over unconscious, subconscious pain.
Absolutely.
And in that case, I don't want to say meditation is painful. What I mean is I remember sitting there being like so frustrated because
yeah.
I didn't feel like I'm doing anything.
Yeah.
And I didn't have 5 seconds where my mind wasn't coming back in or whatever. So of course I left it. Of course you feel you're going to just, you know what, that's not for me. Then you might come back 3 months later. You tried, maybe you do a week this time.
Yeah.
And for me, again, personally, and I would advise anybody listening, don't give up and believe that it doesn't have an incremental effect. Because I can tell you, like I said, I didn't get into a regular meditation practice, and one that's, again, now sort of increased in the last year to, you know, a more regular 4 or 5 times a day for 15 years, man, maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
It took me that long
yeah.
to get into whatever, and you're talking about rewiring and so of course it's difficult, but the reward, like I don't even know how to put it into words.
Right.
If you said earlier when you sort of you connect to the field, or you connect to the source, like whatever words, this is semantics at this point, whether you want to use God or whether you want to use the force or source, whatever it is, when you transcend this physical and the identity of the Richard Garner story, the Brian Coons story, and you touch the face of God, as some people say, meaning you're just, and this is where words fail us. You've fallen into that experience of just pure bliss and joy
yeah.
and love and whatever else. Well, I mean, you don't need to be incentivized after that. Once you've touched that,
yeah, it changes everything.
You're just like, well, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And does that mean the mind isn't going to work in overdrive and the ego is not going to work in overdrive to try to go, uh-oh, I'm losing Brian here.
Right.
Brian might have figured some shit
yeah.
out and he's going, whatever, I got to
right.
step it up now and throw a whole bunch of shit at him, whether it's pleasure, whether it's pain, whether it's distraction, to keep him rooted in the Brian story. Because if not, I'm gone.
Well, when you dip your toe in that, it is really interesting when you say being gone, because that's kind of frightening too. Like that,
yes.
You build up, you spend your whole life building this identity, and you realize it is just that. It's just a character we're playing.
Yes.
And you can play any character you want.
Yes.
It does change the dynamic of relationships and things as well, right? So it's that whole process is quite interesting. And you know, you have to be patient sometimes with some relationships, because you know you can be in a very different place in a very big hurry once you've been there. So it's interesting. We just talked about Dispenza, and it reminded me because you mentioned your the group that you work with, and I think most people probably know Dr. Joe Dispenza now. I mean, I mentioned that I heard of him back at the What the Bleep. It was a quantum physics documentary way, way back. He was a standout for me. But what's the group that you're working with monthly? And you know, I always find trying to get people to sort of become interested in meditation, sometimes it's difficult, but a community or like a retreat or immersing yourself sometimes really helps. But I'm sure that that monthly meeting really kind of keeps you on point and helps your path as well.
Well, a couple of things to that. So we have a group. It was, you know, it's been 10 people, it's been 15 people, but the core is six. And that six has managed to survive over the last 3-4 years, and that's the people. Yeah, some people still come in and out, but generally there's six.
Yeah.
And it's, we call it soul sessions. It's just, you know, what a name we made up to just whatever. And it's a bunch of people that are on this same type, you know, again, different strokes for different folks. But people are on a spiritual path, a journey to deeper consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But as we all know, and you mentioned relationships, this is very key. This is a very, isolation is a necessary part of this journey. A lot of us don't realize until at some point of our life, wow, I'm not comfortable being in a room by myself. If you can't be sitting in stillness and silence with yourself, then that's already a major problem, because you have to be able to be comfortable with yourself first and foremost. Having said that, over the course of this process, when you are changing, for lack of a better word, we know that everybody in your circle, they like Brian. They're already on. They're invested in Brian. Yeah. Whoever
what happened to the old Brian?
The new Brian. We didn't sign up for the new Brian. Yeah. We like the old Brian.
Right.
So we'll find ourselves when we go back into those environments, going back out of almost default to what they expect of us initially. Right? It'll be, you'll just play the role.
Yes.
You'll just go back. Because what are you going to do? Everybody's talking about this thing. And you're going to be, well, actually, guys, I kind of see. And it's going to be like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah, right.
And what the fuck? What, you think you're better than us?
Six shots, man.
Yeah. Let's go here. Come on. You're a downer. You're a buzzkill. So this journey initially, at some point, can be very lonely. It can become lonely. And then that is counterintuitive to the process, because you end up in your head a lot. And that can be very difficult. It can be dark. It's part of the process, going through that darkness and whatever. But at some point, the ability to share and talk to people with similar experiences, because what we're doing with soul sessions, essentially, I mean, it's, for lack of a better term, it's like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, right? It's a group. It's a support group.
Right.
It's a bunch of people who are going through a process of change, of death, and resurrection. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
This is why going back to scriptures now with a different perspective and seeing what people were trying to say, but it got all muddled with the inability to say it at a time like that. Death and resurrection wasn't about, if you believe the Jesus Christ story, about this guy that was the God and he came and he died and he went. No, the death, whatever that was symbolically or for however you want to say it, was meant to help us understand, I believe, that the game here is to, A, be lucky enough to wake up at some point and be aware that this isn't you. But that's step one. That's like alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic. Excellent. Congratulations. You got a chance now. But that's one of 12 steps.
Right.
The work has begun. You're lucky enough to have the awareness, but now you got to do the work. And in this case, when there's a real awakening and a revelation that it's not a small thing that this isn't real, I'm not real, that there's something infinitely whatever and all that, but that process by yourself at some point, I don't think can work. I think you need to then be in a community of some kind of people who are all trying to navigate the same dilemma, which is, how do I die and be reborn, for lack of a better term, into a more, let's say, a metaphysical, spiritual approach to life, and then go back out into this world and where 99.9% of people aren't on board, right. aren't in that yeah. whatever, and everything's pulling you back to survival and right. material and whatever. Well, that's not fucking easy. Yeah. We all know that. It's how good do you feel, and how often have you been like, man, I came out of that meditation today, man. I am just floating. Yeah. This is fucking yeah. whatever. Cut two, you're in a traffic jam. 20 minutes later, some guy's honking at you, whatever, and it's like, all of a sudden, you're engaged in that world. You're pulled into that world. It's very difficult
yeah.
to stay on the path. So we get together once a month, and we just talk about this. We talk about everybody's experiences. We'll sometimes assign a reading or yeah. something so we can come back and have something to talk about. And now what we've sort of evolved into and just started last night, as a matter of fact, was doing some courses together okay. as a group. Yeah. So this Joe Dispenza right. course that we're doing... is and if you don't know Joe Dispenza, he's a master at being able to scientifically articulate metaphysics and spirituality is how I would summarize it. And that is very important. It's a very important bridge for a lot of people to get from where they might be in the physical world or the material world. A lot of people, they have a default of a turn off to spiritual talk or whatever words. Like, I don't even want to say woo. Like, I yeah. you know what he makes? It gives me, it triggers rage in me, actually. Just because it's like, how is the real thing marginalized and dismissed with eye rolls? And then but anyways, that's a whole other conversation. But, so, and I would be one of these people as well. I respond much better to seeing the 2 + 2 = 4 and the scientific explanation of spirituality. He's excellent yeah. at that. So we, as a team, I guess, as a group, are going to do this 7-module course. And obviously, we discuss it after we do meditations yeah. there. Yeah. Like, we open with a meditation. Neat. And it's funny because we have talked about multiple times. How do we spread the soul sessions out to... Because we were saying we got to believe, hey, we know we're not the only ones. Right. Obviously, there's right. other people doing this. But I would think what you're doing and, you know, the people that in the community that you're creating, there's a hunger for this. There's people that want to get together and talk right. in again, support group, for lack of a better word you want to say, and share and hear other people's experiences and be in that energy. And I think you're going to start to see out of necessity, because we're in the midst of an anxiety epidemic right. of so much disillusionment yeah. and unhappiness, that A, there's going to be more individual practice happening. It already is. And B, more and more people are going to come back to their own churches,
right.
for lack of a better word, groups, getting together and sharing their spiritual experiences. And to me, that's I think, a big step into a collective shift.
Is it the group gender? Is it mixed?
It's 4 women and 2 dudes, me okay. and another okay. guy, Michael. It's my friend Stephanie, Yelena, Carla, and Thula. Okay. And again, there's been other people on the periphery, but right. it's been generally that. No, and I mean, we have commented before, Michael and I, that yes, of course, it's skewed. It's like going to a yoga class. Okay. Still in the year right. 2020.
So men, yeah.
It's still going to be 70-30, 80-20 women to men.
You know, because I've been talking about this throughout, and it's like dudes just are having a harder time having these conversations.
Yes.
And opening up about their feelings. And
it's hard, man. Wiring is yeah. hard to... And again, we're going through this... Like, I'm worried. There's days where I'm really worried. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world as we're talking right now that are making those divides deeper. The everybody's wimpy and fucking this generation, and it's just it, like, even I and again, just so you know, just so you can see how much work still remains for me, I'm filled with rage as I'm talking right now, because
we should notice that.
It's weakness, man. Yeah. It's actually the opposite. Right. The people
right.
who are going out and saying it, first of all, do you not remember when you were a kid, the same, your parents saying that shit to you?
Yeah.
Oh, your generation, you're so weak, when I would ever.
Right.
And didn't we say at the time we weren't going to do that?
Yeah.
And now you got a bunch of fucking idiots out there doing the old, oh, we were so tough in my generation. You're fucking full of shit, man. It's your ego.
Yeah.
Honestly, check that, because right. it's not whatever. So when you have this when it gets into liberal conservative, that's dangerous because people already have identified as something over here, and liberalism and the snowflake and the soft and the. I'm not saying there's not overshoot on different sides. We don't speak absolutely. It's not dualistic. The answer isn't black or white, up or down. It's like quantum physics. Right. It's up and down.
Right.
It's here and there.
Yeah.
It's over there and it's over here. And we're all... That's why that is very difficult to get in the material world. Because in the quantum world, there is no notion of dualism. So in this world, you got a bunch of people, guys especially, talking about... Fuck, man, it pisses me off, obviously. But because I'm talking... As I'm saying this to you, I know friends of mine now. That I'm worried about our relationship going forward.
Right.
Because I have guys who are, let's say, skewing more towards the Jordan Peterson thing, right? And again, I've listened to some Jordan Peterson stuff, and there's a lot of wisdom there. The guy's whatever. But what he's not willing to acknowledge, in my opinion, and I've done a deep dive on this guy, he's got emotional scars and healing that he needs to do that he is not doing, and that he's smart enough. And he's one of the intellectual giants on the earth, so he's very good at being able to find an intellectual labyrinth to justify why he might not feel this way about women. When he can't just say, my ego got crushed by a woman back in the day, and I'm not fucking strong enough at this point in my life to acknowledge that, so I'm going to find a way to justify my attacks on women. And if he wants to say, listen, I would sit across from Jordan Peterson and have this conversation. But what I'm saying is, I've had guys come back to me and say, Richard, I'm worried about our maleness. We got to preserve our maleness. This, whatever. And I'm thinking, and what is all this attacks? And I got guys saying to me, you know, everybody's now all of a sudden shitting on, oh, so now it's a bad thing to be a white male now, whatever. And I'll be like, okay, let me just start with this, okay? Do you or do you not acknowledge, or can you acknowledge, that we've had it pretty good to this point in our life as white males? Have you ever sat down and go, well, actually, because empathy is not an automatic default, not at this stage of evolution. You got to actually sit and try to actually walk a mile and think about somebody's experience. And of course, nobody does that. And especially if you start to feel threatened, which now white males feel threatened, what's their default? Attack, defend, attack. Instead of going, well, to be fair, yes, we kind of got a lot of shit just handed to us, where a lot of people had all these obstacles in front of them that I never thought about because it didn't affect me. But now that you mention it, yeah. And is it a big sacrifice for me to acknowledge that and fuck whatever? When all we're always talking about, all those generations that went to war, they made the greatest sacrifice. All you're being asked to do now is just take a little bit of a step back and let some other people join the fucking party. No, can't do that. I'm going to fuck it. That's bullshit. And the Me Too movement is fucking this. This is all they're attacking men. And I've said to people, well, is there going to be somebody that accuses somebody falsely and ruins their life? Yes. We're human beings. Of course that's going to happen. Is that going to be the majority? No. Is it going to be the vast majority? Is it going to be 90%? No. Like any human, whatever, there's going to be bad apples, that whatever. But I don't remember you ever telling me, with this level of passion and anger and emotion, how you were up last night thinking, you know, fuck, I was thinking about these women that can't, you know, can't jog with earbuds on because they're of the fear of being attacked. You know, that's really terrible. You know, I've never heard you say, well, you know, it's kind of tough. Like, now that I think of it, man, the 70s, 80s, and 90s for women in the workplace, fuck, they were really fucking shit.
Right.
And yes, the lack of... So this empathy that's required to just... And it's not about all of a sudden going 0 to 60. You're not a man anymore. You're not whatever. Yes, are there people out there that overshoot on the other side? Of course there are. Human beings, man. That's what human beings do. But if you can't find the ability to be empathetic and say, okay... And I know this is a bit of a tangent, but it's part of whatever's shifting going on, whatever's required, as you and I have discussed, it's going to require men getting in touch with the sacred feminine. The end.
Right.
The world has been operating on a completely devoid of that for what, 5,000 years,
right.
Maybe longer. I think we could all agree, or at least you and I could agree, that whatever the balance that's out of whack is going to be required to get back into balance is going to involve an elevation of the feminine. I don't mean women. I mean in us.
Right.
right away there's a fucking default. We're like, hey, wait a sec, I'm a fucking dude. I'm fine. No, it's not about you're all of a sudden going to be half man, half woman.
Yeah.
It's about you getting into balance at a level where your frequency, for lack of a better word, is harmonious with the source.
Right.
That's what that is. And when we're all testosterone and all anger and all survival instinct and all fear, we are out of harmony with the overall, again, whatever you want to call it, source, God, force, whatever. And that's right now, for a lot of the glass half full, there's a lot of guys coming around to that, for sure. The glass half empty is there's a lot of people who are now building moats to protect that. To say, okay, we got to fight on our hands, and we got to protect, our maleness going forward. Right. I worry about that.
Right. Well, a couple ayahuasca retreats and some of that female plant medicine will certainly change the
that's,
perspective.
We were talking. I mean, that's to be honest, that's the entry point, Brian. Probably right.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get people into experiencing this. Like, it sounds like an odd thing to say, but when you say this isn't real, but you can say that. You've been to the other side of things that are beyond a hallucinogenic whatever. Yeah. And again, it's going to be easy for somebody to say that until they've been on the other side. I've been on the other side. I've done ayahuasca. I don't know anybody that's come back from that and or DMT and gone, you know what? That was just a trip.
Yeah. I haven't done a show on that yet. I'm going to do one soon and really go deep on that. But
it's a big part of this.
Know what we're talking about. You will soon. I'm going to go
So.
Anyway, brother, thank you so much for doing this, dude. It's never a dull moment with you, buddy.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Good stuff, Brian. Thanks, man. Keep rewiring.
Yes, thank you.